Welcome to the Production First Mindset, a podcast where we discuss the world of building code from the lab all the way to production. We explore the tactics, methodologies, and metrics used to drive real customer value by the engineering leaders actually doing it. I'm your host, Liran Chemovich, CTO and co-founder of Rookout. Today, we're going to be discussing the modern software development lifecycle, feature management, and the Azure cloud. With us is a new author, Michael Gillette, head of development at Wind Technologies, a proud member of the Betway Group. Thank you for joining us and welcome to the show. So you've shared a lot about how you're experimenting with feature flags, whether it's testing business or technical hypothesis. And I'm kind of wondering, how do you go about managing those experiments? And especially, how do you go about observing and monitoring them?
Yeah, so it really depends on the kind of the product in question as to how likely and how many experiments we want to run. If we've got front-end applications that are customer-facing, then we will look to do a lot of experimentation. And then for things that are maybe more back-end or data processing, we're less likely to run experiments there. One of the things that we kind of consider is how much of the fact we need to experiment on a product determines its architecture. So some of our applications are built around experimentation in a significant way where it's easy for us to run experiments and we do it frequently. So something like a registration form where we don't know what a customer might perceive as the best way of doing things. There is no industry standard for this. And so we want to find out from how our customers actually use the site. And that requires a good degree of the whole business being comfortable with running experiments on something as important as a registration form. Some of the things that we do to help us manage them is we follow something that we kind of call a hypothesis specification, which is open to anyone to kind of submit ideas. And then the product team would work to understand what is the kind of the expected outcomes, the values of the hypothesis in question, and there'll be some form of priority on that, and then we would look to experiments there. And the way in which we might kind of deem the success of an experiment could be related to the country in which we are, like segmenting the customer base and going, let's try this experiment here. Could be a device type, or it could be completely indiscriminate and that we're going to roll it out to a percentage of customers. And then we'll just look at the success metric, and we, using the hypothesis specification, we can get everyone on the same page: stakeholders, developers, product testing teams, the performance testing team, maybe DevOps as well. It really depends on who's got an interest in this, I guess. We all understand what the success metric is, what the goal is, and that allows us to then conclude confidently whether something is good or not. We'll do a couple of things within feature management tools launched Darkly, where we might tag certain experiments up in a certain way to help manage them in the practical sense. And we use LaunchDarkly's experimentation functionality to help us conclude, or we might be using things like Google Analytics, Adobe Analytics, these other kind of ways of understanding that customer journey through things, and that helps us understand. And then on the actual application itself, we would use something like Application Insights from Microsoft, from Azure, to understand what the application is doing during this, because, yes, we want to understand the customer success of this or not, when it's a business hypothesis. But we also want to understand from the real technical side, how is this working for our apps? And we use App Insights and Azure for this.
Now, I'm wondering, with engineers spending so much of their time working in production environments or just rolling stuff out and experimenting in those environments, how do you see their mindset shifts from focusing more on the code to focusing more on production? How is it different?
Yeah, so that's a fascinating kind of question. And I think it has a lot to kind of think about with that kind of question, where it's why I said earlier that what a hypothesis-driven development or a hypothesis-driven engineering approach. Now, to me, when we think about being data-driven, when we think about using hypotheses where we know the outcome of something, we have to understand first, where are we and what is the problem that we're looking to solve? And we need to understand, well, what does the data show us right now? Then the hypothesis comes along that says, well, actually, we can improve the data, we can improve something. And then it's up to the software developers, software engineers to come up with solutions to these problems and to then prove the hypothesis or not. Now, in my mind, and certainly from a couple of conference talks that I've heard, perhaps, and I think this is perhaps contentious as a point, but I think it's an interesting one, is a software developer someone who gets given a solution and therefore just builds the solution, whereas an engineer takes the scientific approach and wants to experiment and wants to conclude scientifically that something is better or not. Where in my mind, whenever we start talking about using data, when we start talking about having hypotheses, really what we're talking about, therefore, are software engineers and not software developers, because we are empowering people. We want people to question the whole premise of the problem we're looking to solve. The problem might even be solved in not by writing huge amounts of code. But if you give that to developers, to engineers, I'll use the term interchangeably in this context. If we give that to people who write software, give them the problem, they understand what it is that we need to solve, then they're really going to be engineers at the end of it because they can prove it, I think.
You've recently written a book about feature management. So what's the book's name? What is it about?
So the book's name is Feature Management with LaunchDarkly. It's very much about a lot of what I've been discussing anyway. And it starts off, it's split into three sections. The first section is an introduction to what is feature management. I mean, it's a term that some people may well have been aware of for a while, where you can turn things on and off. You could have flags in a database to turn things on and off. But really what I'm talking about in the book is a slightly more modern approach to feature management that LaunchDarkly enables, where you might actually very kind of having a remotely executed way of managing features, being able to do percentage rollouts, being able to target individual customers or individual sessions or requests and having features turned on or off, or not even in the binary state, but maybe even having things that are multivariate tests and having a number of outcomes for a given feature flag. The second section of the book actually looks at how do we achieve these concepts with LaunchDarkly. So there's code examples, there's theoretical kind of discussion points, there's things from my own experience and broader industry experience of how can feature management and LaunchDarkly be used. And then the concluding section of the book is kind of dwelling on LaunchDarkly in depth. So going over all of the features that the platform provides, talking to the differences between, in LaunchDarkly's case, the differences between a server-side SDK implementation and a client-side SDK implementation. And there are interesting things that come with that. So it is both talking about feature management as the concept and the advantages to business and teams and developers and how can we improve the Dora metrics. And it's also how does LaunchDarkly enable us to do that and what does the full LaunchDarkly product offer?
That's awesome. I know you've been an MVP of Microsoft for how many years now?
Since 2012. So we're getting on for almost 10 years now.
Almost a decade. Wow, that's huge. And the Win Technologies is a big Microsoft shop. So I've recently heard you've been a Microsoft MVP since 2012. So that's almost up a decade now. And at Win Technologies, you're pretty much a big Microsoft shop. And so you're relying heavily on Azure. Can you share a bit about that?
Yeah, so we use Azure DevOps and Azure as complementary tools. Azure DevOps is, for some teams, it's their ticket board management. But for all teams, it's where we've got the repositories, the build and release pipelines, and then obviously has a good integration into Azure itself. And we find it to be a very good platform for us. Azure DevOps does really empower a good DevOps practice within teams. Within a single tool, we can manage work, we can manage code, we can manage build and releases, and the testing of all of that can all be done within a single tool, which is really nice. And then obviously Azure as the cloud platform is where we can then deploy that and set it up. And it works very nicely for us. We use infrastructure as code an awful lot, and we can use that. The YAML pipelines allow us to have our pipelines also within code. So we can have confidence. And this comes back actually to trunk-based development. And you need confidence in your pipeline. You need confidence in your infrastructure, not only confidence in the application that you're deploying, to live that kind of trunk-based development experience. And if everything can be code, then everything can have pull requests, everything can have reviews, everything can have checks and quality gates and all of this good stuff before any changes then happen on production. And that works really nicely for us. I did mention earlier that we use App Insights as well, and we use a lot of the Azure product for our various systems and products that we have. And it does work very well for us. We have evaluated other cloud providers as well in the past, and we even, for some of our stuff, we've still got on-prem things, and there's always a conversation of should we be looking at other tech as well. We don't want to be blind to being all in on one particular tech. We want to use the right tech for our teams and our products and the business needs, and so it's constantly under evaluation.
One challenge I hear many companies are struggling with is monitoring. What's your approach for monitoring it Bitway?
Yeah, so we do follow an approach that I first heard around from kind of the SRE model of maintaining good site reliability, of using SLAs, SLOs, SLIs. And we have a lot of them for our products. We use App Insights to achieve this. And what we've done is we've created shareable modules within ARM templates or Terraform or however we're doing the infrastructure as code, where we can actually set those kind of basic queries can be easily shared, and then the team might go and implement different threshold limits if needed for their particular application. And so, yeah, we'll use App Insights not only to be the place where we send our logs, but we can also use it to run queries on that data to then set up monitoring, to set up alerts, and then that can come through to Teams channels or Ops Genie or PagerDuty or whatever it is that we can then use to alert our teams to problems. What we haven't yet done, and we have had conversations, but we've not yet done this, is to integrate the kind of alert firing with a kill switch via LaunchDarkly and having the systems actually turn things on and off. We've not got to that point yet. It's a fascinating idea where the systems themselves can start turning features on and off. We're not there yet.
It's a bit scary.
Yes.
Machines making decisions for us.
Yeah. It's cool that it's available to us if we wanted to. We're just, as you say, it's a bit scary.
No worries. There is one question I love asking all of my guests. So what's the single bug that you remember the most?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And there's possibly actually two things that stick out to me that are things that I have learned an awful lot from. So the bugs themselves, well, one was, actually both have probably not been good bugs at all, but they've taught me a lot. So the first was one of the systems that we had built, a content management system, had kind of grown quite organically, and there weren't the checks and measures in place that probably should have been there. But because of its growth, it hadn't been spotted as a problem, because at the time, the people who were using the CMS knew how it worked and the importance of some of the content nodes within it. We had someone who didn't know that system as well come and delete one of the nodes, one of the content nodes. And that took out a good bit of product that shouldn't have been taken out. It was easy to rectify. You could republish it. It wasn't too bad. But it did present this realization that we're very focused a lot of the time on the importance of feature management and permissions and production access to resources and permissions. But what about content? Content can be crucial to having aspects of a product exist that need to exist. And so we subsequently put in a lot more controls around that. And that stands out to me as something that was not good. The other one is actually talking about LaunchDarkly, and this might be why I'm mindful of it, is we've been caught out in the past with making sure that a client is implemented in a singleton manner. And LaunchDarkly is one of those kinds of clients that you want implemented as a singleton manner in a .NET application. You only want one instance of that client, because otherwise you're going to be newing up many more of these clients. It's going to consume the connections on a server, and then things start going bad. And that might take a long time for you to even get to that point where things start falling over. And so the release might have been a long time ago, and it can be quite difficult to pinpoint what's going wrong. When did that change get made, when these kinds of things accrue over time? And so I'm very conscious of good CMS content management practices, and on the actual dev, the real code implementation, making sure where you only want a single client to exist, make sure it's a singleton.
Definitely. It's been a pleasure having you here and discussing, you know, feature management, software development lifecycle, learning a bit more about Azure. I wish you great luck with your new book.
Thank you. It's been great. It's been a great opportunity to be on here and chat this stuff. I do enjoy it. And yeah, I've got a lot to say, which is probably why I've written a book about it as well. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Michael. And go check out the book. So that's a wrap on another episode of the Production First Mindset. Please remember to like, subscribe, and share this podcast. Let us know what you think of the show and reach out to me on LinkedIn or Twitter at Production First. Thanks again for joining us.